Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrod, here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Ursuline Religioso. How's everyone doing tonight?
Good, Gene. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Dr. E, how about you?
I'm doing great, Gene.
Excellent. If you're doing well, I'm doing well. I'm sure everybody's doing well. So we have an interesting question, as always. We have very detailed discussions about what to talk about on our podcast. I can assure you they are very professional and very, very, very almost science related. I'll let Dr. E introduce this question because he got it on social media, which we've been getting some pretty good feedback from. So Dr. E, take it away.
Well, I threw out the question today, you know, what topics do people want to hear us talk about? And one of the very first one, which I thought was the best one of the day, was why aren't my treatments sticking for more than 1 or 2 days?
That's obviously going to depend on a lot of conditions, variabilities. Sticking for more than 1 to 2 days obviously can entail a lot of things, whether it's no improvement at all or pain or function. So when you have a patient come in, and I'll throw this out to you, Joe, first. When you have a patient come in, let's say one of the most common conditions obviously being low back pain. If a patient comes in to you and you do a treatment, what do you tell them after a treatment to anticipate or expect?
Based on what I do that treatment, I usually am going to tell them to expect a little bit of soreness and discomfort. In my initial evaluation, I'm going through, I'm probably going to put them in some positions that are going to trigger some of their symptoms. And to me, I like to tell them that, you know, I need to do that because I need to know what provokes it and what makes it better. And then the goal is to work towards, you know, what makes it better. And so I'm going to tell them to expect some soreness, but that nothing should be progressive in the increase. It should get a little bit better each day, and shouldn't last more than 24 to 48 hours. So that's kind of where I'm starting with them. But I want to make sure that in my initial evaluation, my goal is to have an effect on their pain, because that's what I can tell them. I can sell myself to them based on my ability to change the symptoms that they came in with.
Right. And with those symptoms, you're also, and I know I do this a lot, and I know I've read Dr. E's blog a ton, and he writes about this often as well, is doing test and retest, right? So during your evaluation, obviously you're doing your subjective, then you go through some objective tests and palpation, movement screens, whatever you do, and then you do whatever techniques you do again, and we'll kind of go through some of those. And then you test and retest, right? So you show the patient that even though you even might still have some pain, this is improved. But also some of those tests and retests might show you, Dr. E, if somebody's a quick responder, and that might tell you, at least either through clinical experience that you've had or other outcome measures that you use, whether they will have lasting effects from the treatment.
Right. Basically, again, it's a very McKenzie-like approach, but I take what recent research has shown. You know, this is more modern manual therapy and of the neurophysiologic changes. Basically, one of my favorite studies to reference to patients, basically, you know, and I tell this again from the beginning, I kind of like set the stage that no matter what I do, whether it's, you know, ISTM or manipulation or just a repeated loading strategy or mobilization or needle or anything, even taping, that you know, any of the rapid changes we get, whether it's an increase in range of motion or mobility or stability, your function improves, you know, your pain centralizes, those effects basically, they last for maybe 2 to 4 hours. So I call that the window of improvement. And I tell patients that, you know, I will give you a strategy to keep that window of improvement open. But if you do not adhere to the strategy, And, you know, sometimes you have to do it an hourly, sometimes you have to do it a bit more, sometimes you can get away with doing it a bit less. But if you walk out of here feeling better, and I gave you the right thing to do, and I made sure that you can do it correctly, if you don't keep at least part of that improvement, that it is your fault and not mine. So, you know, from the very beginning, I kind of set the stage and say that, look, chances are, you know, in 80% of the patients, and if you fall into the 80% versus the 20%, we can make a very rapid change today. And if you hold on to that, the research also shows that if you hold on to that for visit two, then, you know, that was validated by Chad Cook, that you're going to have a good outcome the majority of the time and in a short time. So, you know, I tell patients that it's all typically good news, especially if I can get them to say that they have intermittent pain. And there's various ways that I kind of lead the subjective, because people kind of confuse, you know, persistent pain with constant pain. And, you know, true constant pain, I think very few people have, unless they're acutely injured. Because most of the time, people have it every time they move, or if they're flexion intolerant, but they're slouching all day, they confuse that with constant pain. So I tell them, you know, if it's intermittent pain, then we already know your nervous system can reset. It's just that if I reset your nervous system, and you reduce that threat and your pain and movement thresholds elevate, then you have to keep it reset. And I will give you the strategies for that. So basically, I tell them I can help them, but it's really all up to them to stay better, because I can't treat them every hour.
Right. That's incredibly important, is the education piece of the patient, right? So that goes into patient education, empowerment, so they know what to expect, what to anticipate. In putting it in perspective, I mean, in the 168 hours that there are in a week, if a patient comes in two times a week, that's what, like 0.01% of the week that they're going to be seeing you. So the changes that you make, and I always tell patients this, that, you know, my job is to get you on the path of righteousness, and it's your job to walk it, you know. So we'll get you there, but you have to teach them what that progress is and what their expectations of getting better are. So if you're only making changes, you know, for 1 or 2 days, you really have to maybe ground what those changes are and see what their improvements are and what their expectations of improvement is. And it takes time to retrain that nervous system anyway.
It does. I do say that the your nervous system is easily tricked, but it's not easily convinced.
So it's getting that motor pattern back into them. And but let's say you are getting that person that after you see them once, they come back 3 or 4 days later and they've reverted a little bit, and they come back 3 or 4 days later and they've reverted a little bit. So you ask them, well, how much better do you feel? 15-20%. How much better do you feel? 15-20%. At what point do you switch up your mindset, your techniques, and just throw something new at them?
In one treatment, I'm not upset with 15-20%. And to be honest, they're going to have to come back and tell me that they don't feel like they're getting any better. I'm going to plateau and do something. I'm always trying to think about what the next progression is. But progression is different than what I think you're getting at, which is changing a treatment plan or approach. I think that's different, right?
Right. Not progressing their treatment or regressing their treatment based on how their body is responding, but I mean changing your mindset of an approach to your treatment and starting from anew, essentially.
Yeah, I think...
Or do you just refer at that point?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm pretty happy with 15-20% too. I mean, I like to make around 50-80% changes in the first two visits. But basically, you know, my leash is two visits. And if I see zero changes in two visits in function or anything, I mean, then I probably refer out, because people are, you know, I'm cash based and I don't want to waste anyone's time or money. But basically 15-20%, that's enough. But I mean, yeah, if you're talking like 4 to 6 visits and you have the law of diminishing returns and they had the slow gains in the beginning and they kind of plateau around 50. I mean, it's just been my experience that once people kind of make it over that 50%, and I'm very positive and I like to control the interaction, because patients can kind of be really down on their whole condition. It's like I tell people, once you get to like beyond 50%, that you very rarely have seen someone to get 50-80% or even stuck at 80% and then they plateau. Because it's like that last 20%, while it may be hard to attain, I usually tell people that it's something that you're doing that we haven't discovered yet. That's not only really, you know, you might be perfectly compliant on your resets and you'll be able to reset your nervous system, but you might be doing something to also negate your resets. Like you're not moving enough, or you're not, you know, sometimes it's dehydration, or sometimes they have crappy sleep and you haven't really addressed that.
And it's also figuring out, at least when I'm talking to patients, I try to stay away from numbers as much as possible. So, you know, you have those patients that come in that obviously have been through kind of the gamut of PTs, and you ask them, well, tell me how you're feeling, what's going on, or describe some of the issues you're having. And they go, yeah, you know, my back, it kind of hurts into this area. It's like a two. Do you ever get that? It's like a two, maybe a three sometimes. Right now, maybe it's around a four. And just moving them away from the numbers and actually getting qualified feeling of what's going on, and then grounding it in daily activities that they've tried to do or couldn't do, or have diminished quality of that motion. And again, getting them thinking about how are you doing these things versus per se how is your pain in that area. If you have certain techniques that are your go-tos, right? If you're treating a movement dysfunction, trained in manual therapy, right? I do my assessment, check the joints, see if anything is generating pain or is restricted, work on that, and then again have the patient walk and do some movement things. So in my treatment, I'll always assess the spine, the joints, whatever it is, and then do some kind of movement retraining. And to me, that always works well, and that's what I always look at after that. When they come in, how's their movement? And to me, there's always a correlation with their improvement, whether they're getting better after a visit or two or not, based on that movement. Do you guys look at something that you're gauging aside from their subjective response of why something might not be working?
When I'm looking at progress, it can be as simple as them being able to do something functional that they couldn't have done before. So I'm trying to ask as much subjective functional information and get as much functional information back. Sometimes patients don't remember that they told me at the initial evaluation that they couldn't stand for longer than 10 minutes. And then the next week, they're standing for our treatment for 30 minutes. And, you know, some patients don't have a good grasp of what what that time frame is when they're in that much pain. So I think I am always looking for some kind of functional measure of progress. But I like to, whatever my treatment plan is, if I am saying that it's a muscle control kind of a plan, and we're trying to establish initiation to correct whatever my goal for the treatment is, that's what I'm using as my barometer of whether we're making progress, and then the functional subjective on top of that. So if I think it's a flexibility issue or a range of motion issue or whatever my target goal is, and then if I'm making progress objectively and they're not reporting subjective progress, then that's when, you know, maybe I'm starting to say, well, if I was right, then both of these things should be improving together, right? So that's when I start to think that I need to change my or shift the way I had planned the treatment.
Yeah, only you know, hey, but you're moving better. Only get you so far. I would say like maybe two visits before people were like, well, what am I going to feel better? I do agree with that. But again, for me, it's all about controlling the interaction and just making it as positive as possible. So, you know, I like to teach about the mode of pain, and people are so hung up on numbers. I think it is too good to get away from numbers. But, you know, if they're always rating it at a seven, it's like, well, how often is this 7 out of 10 happening? It's like, oh, it used to happen 5 times a day. Now it's only happening twice a day. And I'm like, well, you know, if every time it comes back, it's a 7, but it just happens less and not less, you're still improving. And sometimes you just even have to get people to realize that it's improving, even though the intensity is always the same. And that could also just be, just like Joe said, it could be the duration of a functional activity, could even be the duration of how long they perceive their pain. So, because, you know, when I tell people, it's like, oh, you said on the subjective, I have recorded here an initial history that, you know, it happened for 2 hours, and it also happens, you know, 3 or 4 times a day. Now it's happening, still 7 out of 10, but now it's only happening once a day, and it's only for half an hour. But and you know, I tell people, if we can just get it to go away completely, it doesn't matter whether it was a 7 out of 10 every time, because we're just decreasing the frequency every time, and almost every time I see you. So, you know, again, it's all about, for me, decreasing that perceived threat and the way the patient, like, reconceptualizing what pain even is to a patient. If you remove that threat, you know, a lot of other things can really improve.
Yes, yeah, so right. It becomes that whole approach, right, is telling the patient exactly what they're feeling, because it's very powerful when you explain to somebody that even though you are hurting, you're not necessarily hurt. And to have that explained and really process that, you could see patients really opening up after that. And, you know, another, you know, tell patients, don't anticipate, react, right? So when somebody's in pain for so long, they are always anticipating. And at that point, whether you're in pain or not, you're still limited. So whether you're treating them and they're better, they never know it because they're always restricting themselves. So that's also on you to see that, notice that, and pick up those restrictions even without pain and get them out of that.
Yeah, and back to what Urson said, I like to tell my patients in the beginning that this is what I'm going to ask you, so you know, so that when you come back in, I want to know frequency of your symptoms. I want to know when you have your symptoms, how long do they last? I want to know the duration. And then I want to know the intensity. So have we made changes in any of those three realms, so that they're not confused when I ask them that every visit?
Right. Yeah. Right. People are very, very fixed on intensity.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely helps to let them know what to anticipate. I had a couple evals today, and it was the same thing. You know, one lady she came in and she told me she has sciatic pain. So she showed me pain from her back that wraps around into her thigh, anterior thigh. So I was like, listen, first of all, it's, you know, it just kind of broke down what sciatic pain really is. And, you know, so you could see her eyes kind of get wide open. And to her, just knowing that it wasn't sciatic pain was a huge relief, which helped out a lot. And then, you know, she felt better after the treatment, and I kind of told her, you know, it's easy to make you feel better. It's hard to keep you that way. So to kind of ground them again and knowing that it's a process, that your body's going through changes and your nervous system needs to adjust to it. But I try to keep it, like Urson, you said, I try to keep it pretty light in the clinic, joke around a lot. It's pretty loose. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I have the other problem of patients coming in with zero pain and they just like coming in to hang out with me. So I don't know if it's just me or it's a common thing, but
you keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. We got to be, it's that voice.
We got to keep them out. Cause they're like, you know, I'm feeling good. There's nothing wrong. So I was like, well, what are you doing here? Well, you know, just like hanging out with you.
See, as a cash based practitioner, people pay for an hour and I'm done with them in half an hour. And they're like, then all of a sudden becomes a la carte PT. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, my upper trap's a little sore. Can you rub it here? And I'm like, look, I'm just going to refund you because I'm done now. You know, and I'd just rather do notes for half an hour.
That sounds like a waste of 30 minutes.
It's always paperwork.
You should put in a little coffee bar and make it part of the experience.
I've thought about it. If I didn't work in a gym, maybe.
What? Most gyms have coffee bars. All right, we digress. So any closing thoughts on patients' improvement, if techniques aren't sticking, if you know, they come in a couple times and you see marginal to no improvement?
I'd have to say that, again, using my just recent patient from today, I saw her 2 years ago. She improved after 100% after having chronic headaches and TMD for, you know, after 4 visits. She had them for years. Then she started eating Jawbreakers randomly in September and waited like for 3 months before coming to see me. And
those still exist?
Yeah. And I think she ate the remaining ones because basically she ate them for an entire month. She ate whatever's left of them.
Wow.
But, so yeah, her jaw flared up and, you know, I was like, look, we got you better before, you had it for years. This time you only had it for a couple months, so obviously it's no issue. So after she left and she felt better, you know, I basically alleviated all the threat. you know, she was very, very compliant with home exercise because she realized they worked last time. And, you know, I saw her a week later and she said, look, I was very good for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, breaking it down, usually if someone's very compliant and they improved before, and all of a sudden, you know, if someone improved for 2 or 3 days, it's obviously something they're doing, because if someone only improves for a couple hours and maybe you didn't choose the right treatment or the right home exercise program, or you didn't do enough that maybe you undertreated them. But if someone improves for 2 or 3 days, it's absolutely been my experience that they are probably doing something to negate whatever you gave them. And for her, it was actually just that day she was diagnosed with acid, with what she said was the most severe form of acid reflux. And I don't even know what the level was, but she called it level 6. I guess there's 6 levels of acid reflux.
That's the jawbreaker level.
Yes. And, you know, she's a flexion intolerant patient, or the cervical spine. So she's been sleeping on 2 or 3 pillows. So yeah,
sounds like a winner.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you need to get a wedge. She's like, oh, there's wedges? You know, and apparently doctors tell them they need to elevate themselves, but they don't tell them how to elevate themselves. And, you know, I think you just got to play a little bit of a detective, because often you could be doing everything right, and it's just something the patient hasn't told you, or obviously they're not even aware that they're doing. And it might be many things, but usually it's just, you know, sometimes you can narrow it down.
Good thoughts, Joe?
I'd like to make sure that everybody is listening to their patients when you ask your patients the right questions. Make sure that you're listening not only to what they say, again going a little bit deeper, trying to figure out what they mean.
Right. That's a big one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and subjective is important, and I think often overlooked.
Exactly. I mean, it's you and the patient, right? You're building that relationship, and it takes understanding and communication, like any relationship. At least that's what they tell me. So the last piece, at least my thought, is use technology when you can. And it's been incredibly useful, because everybody has, and by everybody I mean a lot of people, obviously dependent on your population that you work with. But if you have access to a smartphone, or your patients do, if you want them to be compliant with home exercises, record them doing the home exercises on their own phone so they see it. A lot of people are visual learners, and it will make a huge difference. And, you know, keep it to 1, 2, 3 maybe really good exercises that you want them to do, or movements. Don't overload them. The more they do, the more you give them, the less chance they'll do it. So take advantage of all the cool gadgets that most people have. And so instead of being on Twitter and Facebook, they can be watching themselves doing the exercises.
That's a good tip. I like that.
I do that too. I used to film them on my phone and upload it to YouTube, and I noticed that people weren't exactly some people were clicking on the link, some people were not. You know, I'd give them a private link. I do that for the less technological, for people with only like a desktop browser. But yeah, anyone has a smartphone, I just film with their own phone too. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it works out a lot. And don't assume, regardless of your patients, because I treat a lot of physicians, a lot of athletes, and when you show them proper motions, they will forget it and they will revert right back to where they were. So make sure they see it and record them seeing it. Give them hints, and you'll see pretty big changes and differences from that. All right, so that's our thoughts on how to progress your patients, and some thoughts on what to do if you're not seeing improvements, right? So don't forget, we put a lot on our shoulders because we want our patients to get better. We spend a lot of time and we build relationships with these people. But if they're not getting better, it's not necessarily always on you as the clinician. Sometimes it is, but most times I would say it has to do with the patient.
Yeah.
So take the time to really look at the whole picture. Like Dr. E said, be a detective.
Have a good holiday, everyone.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Happy, what's the day? Hanukkah? Third day of Hanukkah, I think. Hanukkah, Christmas coming up, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. And hope you get some good. Have spent some time with the family. Drink some spiked eggnog that I know Dr. E will be partaking in. And we'll see you guys maybe in the new year.
What? All right.
Thanks for listening.
How dare you?
Am I wrong?
No.
And on that note, have a good one.